Hi there, it's Jeff Klinkenberg. I'm going to read something to you today. This is one of my favorite essays from maybe a couple decades ago. I called it Thunder Man. And I thought it'd be a good one to read now that we're starting to experience that weather in not only in Florida, but up here where I live now in western North Carolina. We had a beaut of a storm last night. So here we go. Tad Staples savored summer, especially afternoons when the cumulus clouds piled up like dumplings before turning gray and ugly. He liked when the atmosphere above Florida developed late afternoon indigestion. First there were little rumbles, then the dramatic rolls. When the main course arrived, he could hardly contain himself. He attached two microphones to the screen front door and switched on his tape deck. Through headphones, he listened to what he was recording. As the tempest peaked, as the crash boom ba apocalypse seemed imminent, I watched him standing in the dim light, swaying to music that had moved his soul. Staples, who was 56 when I wrote this, was Florida's Thunder Man. He kept track of it for the rest of us. It was his hobby. He loved its majesty and power. He collected it on tape and stored it in his memory. He listened, critiqued, interpreted. He was like no one else I had ever known. Sometimes he sold a recording to a sound effects company, but for him a sale was merely icing on the cake. In his otherwise small world, thunder was everything, and he was always surprised when he found out that other people lacked his enthusiasm. They may have claimed to be interested, but they weren't. He'd telephone, leave a long voicemail, but they never called back. Quote, "They just flapped their gums about being interested," he said after the latest bout of hurt feelings. Kerpow! A storm in Florida. The sky is on fire. Thunderman couldn't see it. He had been blind since infancy. Crackety blam! While the rest of us cowered in the closet, he aimed his dead eyes toward the heavens, and for a moment he felt like a lamb of God. Whoa! That was a good one, he said. For an instant, a profoundly lonely human cracked a small smile. He had diabetes and arthritis to go along with his blindness. He was pale and overweight and needed dental care. He had lived alone in near poverty in a rented Tampa house with a leaky roof. His personality got in the way of friendships. He suffered from depression. He had never been able to explain to family, friends, strangers, or doctors, his obsession with thunder, perhaps because he didn't understand it himself. People disappointed, but thunder never did. Thunder never said, "You're crazy. Quit bothering us. Grow up." Thunder filled him up like the lamb chops in his refrigerator. He had been born lonely in Melrose, Illinois, on February 13, 1952, tiny and weak. He ended up in an incubator, one of those rare infants who develops retinopathy of prematurity, or ROP. The high doses of the incubator oxygen damaged his undeveloped retinas. Some babies recover, but he didn't. And even when he stood on his porch and lightning electrified Tampa, he saw nothing of the flash. Quote, "My blindness was a blessing. It allowed me to develop my other talents. I listened very well." He never forgot a sound. He could imitate the sputtering engine of the Piper Club flying over his house. Listening to televised bowling, he could perform an accurate imitation of ball striking pin. He performed train imitations, steam locomotives, and diesel. He was always trying to talk someone into driving him to the tracks so he could make a perfect recording up close. Thunder was his raison d'etre. Each thunderclap is different, he said, like a snowflake. And the imitations poured out of him, the cloud to ground, ground to cloud, cloud to cloud, the rolling thunder he heard on hot afternoons. Quote, I disappointed my parents. They wanted, I guess, the best for me. They wanted me to use my intelligence and find a way to support myself. They hated my interest in thunder. They said, cut it out. They thought that my love of thunder was a distraction from the important things they wanted me to be doing. I'd record it and listen to it, and I'd say, listen to this. And I remember my mother saying, he mimics her voice, if you say one more thing about thunder, you will be severely punished. I'd have to wait until my mom and dad left the house to get back to my thunder. They'd swap my interest in thunder away like it was a fly. He imitated an obnoxious house fly. By third grade, he could read Braille as fast as sighted children read their school books. Even now, he devoured Braille books and books on tape like a starving man. He recently had read The Perfect Storm by Sebastian Younger. He liked the atmospheric novels of Cormac McCarthy because violent weather accompanied the violent characters. Braille books and Library of Congress recordings were scattered about his claustrophobic three-room bungalow in a blue-collar neighborhood where men worked on their own cars under the oaks. He knew his nearest neighbors and their dogs by sound. He heard a distant bark and said, there's Skippy. He heard the mail truck coming a long block away. He heard the faintest train horn in the distance. He identified birds in the maple by their songs. He had listened incessantly to a book on tape about bird calls until he learned their vocalizations. He listened to famous speeches on tape. To entertain me, he performed Babe Ruth's Throat Ravaged by Throat Cancer, delivering his farewell speech at Yankee Stadium. He performed Winston Churchill, emoting about blood, sweat, and tears. Suddenly, Churchill became Lord of the Rings author J.R. Tolkien, broadcasting a tennis match at Wimbledon. His folks, the late Archie and Eugene Francis Staples, never understood their son's obsession. He was no longer in contact with his three siblings. If I saw them, they would only say, you still haven't given up thunder, and that would be a big, great big downer. When I asked where they live, for their phone numbers, any details about them at all, he said, quote, I prefer not to think of them. His family moved to Indiana when he was a boy. He was 12 when he became obsessed with thunder after sitting at home listening to a passing storm. It was the sound, the deep, satisfying sound, he said. He also had an affinity for music. His working-class parents hoped he might have a career like Ray Charles. He lacked the dedication, though he had played organ at Calvary Community Church in Tampa for two decades. A small church salary and Social Security were his only sources of steady income. Sometimes he skipped the Wednesday evening service when a thunderstorm was brewing. Otherwise, a church deacon picked him up and drove him to the service, stopped at Publix on the way home, and bought him groceries, carried them into the dark house, maneuvered through the debris on the kitchen floor, and stacked the groceries in the refrigerator, the only place in the house with a working light. When he was lucky, a clap of thunder woke him. If not, he depended on the radio for clues. He owned many radios, including instruments that broadcast weather alerts when storms were in the vicinity. If he heard something interesting, he sometimes telephoned the nearest weather bureau for more information. People at the weather bureau knew him only by voice. Some had learned to hang up when they heard the voice because they knew a long monologue about thunder and their failures to be interested in thunder was in the offing. Frequently, he telephoned newspaper columnists for long weather-related conversations. In one of our talks, he told me he sometimes telephoned the Rwanda embassy in Washington to request recordings of African thunderstorms, but had yet to receive one. More often, he called the research desk of the Tampa Hillsborough Library for information, but ended up launching a tirade when he felt his questions were treated with disrespect. I talked to a librarian about him. She rolled her eyes. Thunderman also was mystified about his poor relationship with weather professionals. In a perfect world, he might have telephoned the Fox TV weatherman, Paul Delgado, invited him over for a chat. Thunderman would fix his friend lamb chops and pour glasses of diet tea. After eating, they'd retire to the den to listen to one of his hundreds of recordings. He'd put on a favorite from July 4th, 2004, and turn the volume way up. First, they'd hear the rumble, the wind in the distance, the sound of the interstate. Crack! Thunderman would jump. He would sway. I called Delgado. I have never actually met Mr. Staples, Delgado told me. I'll bet I've talked to him 500 times. He seems to always call about 2 minutes before I'm going on the air. We sat in Thunderman's yard and listened to the jets landing at Tampa International. If he hears them circling, he knows they must be flying around bad weather and goes on high alert. He was on high alert right now. Quote, we have three or four storms clusters in the vicinity, he said. They're pulsing up and down. Hear that rumble? It's north of here, on the Hillsborough and Pasco borders, and that won't help me. Wait, hear it? The other one? It's 4 miles away to the west of us, over Tampa Bay, heading for Calradese Island. It's going to miss us. Crack! Excuse me, that one has possibilities. It's east of us, coming this way. I must prepare my equipment. Once or twice a year, he got a recording he might sell for a couple hundred dollars to a sound effects company. Tampa's Michael Orr, director of F7 Sound and Vision, once edited a Thunderman recording and told me, I can tell you it's challenging enough for a sighted person to make professional recordings, he said. There are meters to read, tape lengths to consider, microphone placements to consider. Thunderman, of course, had to set up his equipment by feel and memory. He did so now as I watched. Okay, he said, sounds like a good storm. It could even have hail. It could be big. The storm petered out, and we exited the claustrophobic house. I sat on the stoop. He sat on a moldy chair. I have a theory about thunder, he said. You can tell how powerful a storm is going to be by its lowest audible frequency. I would love to work with someone about this. We could warn people about the storm by the sound of the thunder. I can't get scientists interested. They are like everyone else I have met. They are like the people who say to me, you are a thunder-loving son of a bitch, aren't you? My dad was like that. A different kind of storm was suddenly brewing. Quote, my dad was like me. He sometimes spoke before he thought things out. The effing this and the effing that. He had a heart of gold. He could fix things. He had a wonderful singing voice. He gets so mad at me. Get off your ass, you stupid, dumb blankety blank. You cold, selfish little blankety blank. If you don't like my goddamn rules, pack your effing bags and get the hell out of my house. Thunderman did. With grant money from a charity, he was able to move to Tampa from Indiana 2 decades ago. He did not return home, even after his dad suffered his final heart attack. Sometimes in a nightmare, his dad is alive in his room in Tampa, demanding that he come back home and forsake thunder. quote, every day I live with a hatred, he said. For that reason, he wondered if he, the disappointing son, was destined for the nether regions. Quote, God gives you a report card. Did you go to church? Check. Did you read your Bible? Check. There are other things, too. I get angry. I curse. But I am working on those things. I am trying to work on emotional maturity. Perhaps there would be thunder in heaven. Perhaps the angels need somebody to study the thunder in the clouds. In Thunderman's heaven, nobody would hang up on him because he was different. The end. Thunderman. I'm not sure what became of him, but I hope he's still out there turning on his tape recorder. Until next time, bye.